We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's another crime epic from legendary Hollywood director Martin Scorsese. The Irishman, which stars Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci, and a long list of other A-listers. And today on Profiles, you'll hear from Scorsese, De Niro, and Pacino. The Irishman, coming up next on Profiles.
Welcome to Profiles. From entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs, Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Sooner or later,
get the gun out of his hand!
Everybody put here has a date when he's gonna go.
You want to be a part of this fight? Would you like to be a part of this history?
Yes, I would. Whatever you need me to do, I'm available.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Irishman is based on a book called I Heard You Paint Houses by Charles Brandt. In the world of organized crime, painting houses means a hit job, cleaning up bodies, making a mess go away. In The Irishman, Robert De Niro plays Frank the Irishman Sheeran, a high-ranking member of the Teamsters Union. Brandt's book is based on what Sheeran told him about organized crime and mob hits over the course of several decades. Jimmy Hoffa was the president of the Teamsters, one of the most powerful men in the entire country, but also had connections to organized crime. He's played in the film by Al Pacino. He was convicted of jury tampering, bribery, and fraud as far back as 1964. Hoffa spent time in prison, resigned from the union, and was even pardoned by President Nixon in 1971. But 4 years later, he disappeared. And ever since 1975, people have wondered what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. Who killed him? Where is he buried? Before his death, Frank Sheeran claimed that he was the one who killed Hoffa and that they burned the body in an incinerator. The confession matches forensic evidence, according to former New York chief medical examiner Dr. Michael Baden. But those claims have also been discredited, and the true mystery might not ever be solved. Scorsese's film doesn't veer from the theory about how Hoffa was killed, but the movie isn't really about that. It's an examination of American crime, corruption, and politics that spans four decades. I recently had the chance to attend the L.A. premiere of The Irishman, thanks to my friends at Netflix. And in the first part of this profile, I'll share some of the audio from an exclusive news conference that featured Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, and Martin Scorsese with members of my group, Critics' Choice, as we're now known. Outside.
Just me, my mate. You know I made the moon, honey.
Let me put McGee on the phone.
Hello? Hey, my friend, how are you? Listen, I got that kid I was talking to you about here. I'm gonna put him on the phone and let you talk to him, okay?
Hello?
Is that Frank?
Yes.
Hiya, Frank. This is Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah, yeah.
Glad to meet you.
Well, glad to meet you, too.
Even if it's over the phone. I heard you paint houses.
Yes, yes, sir, I do. I do, and I also do my own carpentry.
Glad to hear that.
Robert De Niro and Martin Scorsese have worked together on 9 different film projects. Who could forget, of course, Goodfellas or Casino? Al Pacino and De Niro have also worked together many, many times. Heat coming to mind, which is a great Michael Mann film. But Pacino and Scorsese have never worked together. The movie The Irishman is about choices, choices that people make, how those choices affect the rest of your lives and your family. And at our news conference in L.A., Scorsese, De Niro, and Pacino were asked about some of the choices that they've made over the course of their career and how that might apply to this film.
It's like a whole life, don't you think? Like you want to start like when? And then you say, oh, I should have done that, and then I shouldn't have done, you know? What do you think, Al?
Well, I really had trouble deciding whether I should do The Godfather or not.
That's a joke.
I'm wondering. Yeah, that's very good. That's really good. You got me there.
That was a tough one.
I thought it was real. Okay.
It was a life changer. But at the same time, that's all relevant, isn't it? It's relevant to where you are at that time in your life. So a decision you make based on instinct is different than this, you know. Yeah. So that I know. But I made a couple of choices that... In terms of, you know, life choices, of course, there's which career is life, though. Your work is life, too. But I made a couple of choices that I thought were, I knew going in, and they turned out to be really very great for other people. I mean, they didn't do it. But at the same time, it's sort of, when I look back at it, I that's the choice I made. It didn't bother me at all. That they turned out to be well, or you know, so I can't remember a choice. There was one choice I made, but I cannot say it because if I say it, it's going to be about somebody who is still around and is working, and he isn't up on this stage. I'll tell you that right. But it was a choice of playing a character, and I was offered this tremendous opportunity, and I didn't feel right about it, and I then went to see somebody do something that it was connected to the role I would have played, but it was too late because some great actor had taken the part. And then when I saw it, they were great in it, so it didn't bother me. And then there was another one too that happened to. But I felt at the time I made a choice because there was a period of I'm going on talking too much. I mean, sorry. I have that sort of trail off thing. I go into it and I'm gone. It's. Are you done yet?
I'm waiting for Bob. Bob, you're going to do yours, right?
That's great.
About your life choices or career choices, or how do you?
I've had a lot. It's too complicated to go into in this situation. But I guess in relation to this movie, I'm very happy that we worked so hard to get it to where it is today, and. Because we worked hard and are part of something very special, and then I'm so grateful that it seems to be getting a great reception, and that's so that's a good feeling for me and my life and everybody around me. So I feel really terrific about that. I have so many other life choices that I couldn't go into in a book. You could do it, but here, mm-hmm. that I'm going this, you know. Whatever. So, I hope that's a decent answer.
It's a complicated thing, of course. I mean, I found that over the years, the choices I made in terms of making films, I got to a point that each film was another lifetime, you know. And I went ahead and made choices as to what I felt comfortable with. I tried some experiments from time to time, but in so doing, I backed out of two or three major movies that became very popular and very famous and award-winning and that sort of thing. But I couldn't find my way in there. I didn't know why until years later. Years later when it became... So I always have this line about the professional and... the amateur, in a way. Like, if I stayed an amateur, I think that was pretty good. An amateur is the word love is an amateur, you know? I'm not putting down professionals, and I always wish I could be. But it took me a long time to understand that, and I guess I shied away from certain projects because I just didn't know how to do them. I didn't feel I had that connection with it. And the connection has to be something personal. And there are other reasons too, but it's a more layered than what I'm saying. But you know, when the film you didn't do is a great success, I couldn't. You know, I couldn't do it. And if I had made it, it wouldn't have been the great success. I don't mean to be self-deprecation, but what I mean is that it would have been a different film. You follow? And so, like, you made your choice.
Still to come, you'll hear some epic stories from Al Pacino, and I'll have my take on The Irishman on this KMOX Profile.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Can you believe this weather, Frank?
Huh? It's 85 degrees outside. Perfect.
Hey, Tony, Jake.
Jimmy.
People freezing to death in New York, and look at us.
Hey.
Why we don't live here all year round is what I want to know. Oh. Beautiful.
It's summer.
What?
It's summer. People aren't freezing to death in New York. It's summer.
In my mind, it's always 8 degrees in New York. I'm making a point.
Well, Al and I have known each other over the years. We've known each other for decades, since we were in our 20s. And we've worked a couple of times together, and we've had an unusual relationship in some ways, and maybe not so unusual, where we always felt close because of our situations, and we would commiserate or confide or talk or get advice about things over the years, over the decades. And we've worked together too. With this project, Al and I were at an opening in Europe. I think it might have been London. It was London, Paris, or Spain. And we were so, like, the people were so great, and you know, the crowd. So we said, you know, why not? One day we hope that we'd be as deserving of this kind of adoration with something that we're more proud of, and then to us is what that is. And I remember the last day of shooting, of Al's shooting in the Irishman, and I said, remember when we said that to each other that time? And this, you know, for nothing else, we did it in this movie, and we will be proud of it. We are proud of it. So
on the day after the premiere, where these conversations with Scorsese and De Niro and Pacino took place, Al Pacino stole the show. I'd never interviewed him before. I'd never met him before. But he kind of is exactly who you might think he is. He's 79 years old, by the way. So one of the questions that came up, and I'm going to be honest with you and tell you, I thought it was a strange question. I would not have asked it, but somebody in the Broadcast Film Critics Association said, hey, have you ever thought of what would have happened if De Niro played Jimmy Hoffa and Pacino played De Niro's role as Frank Sheeran? So Pacino gave that some thought, and he came up with this.
Well, finally, a question that I got a parable for. I'm so ready now. Okay. Sorry, guys.
That's all right.
Anybody got a pillow?
No.
Here it is. I was at the Actor's Studio, young man at the Actor's Studio. I was about 25 at the time. And I was too shy to do a scene there. I've been there for about 6 months, and I'd see people, and I would be sitting watching, and then I'd go home, and I didn't know anyone there, and then I finally signed up to do a scene. Because at the studio, you have sessions. I'm sorry, this is going to go on. I'm not
going
to do
it. No, keep going. It's good. I
got to slow it down. So I'm there, and then I had the scene, and I was going to do Hickey from Eugene O'Neill's Iceman Cometh, and Hamlet. And wrote it down. And it was my turn, finally, to go up in front of the great Lee Strasberg at the Actors Studio, the hallowed Actors Studio, with all these people who sit out there. And what they do is you do a scene, and afterward they don't, like, criticize it. They discuss it with Lee as the moderator, because it is for professionals. It's not an acting school, the Actors Studio. So anyway, I went up there. And Lee Strasberg was sitting where he sat in the front, and you'd go up on this stage there at the studio. And he said, wow, this is, first of all, he said, Al Pacino. He pronounced my name right. that never happened. I went to a whole school, a public school, and they never, Pekini, Pecuno, Pecani, that kind of thing. But I said, he's pronounced my name right. He's a great man. So I went up there and I did a monologue from The Iceman Cometh, which I had done all my life. And I did it, and it was over, and then I turned around and I started Hamlet. Oh, what a rogue. Because he said, he looked at the card, he's Al Pacino, Hamlet? And Hickey from The Iceman Cometh. He said, all right, let's go do it. And I got up there and I did Hickey. I did it all. And then I turned around and I did Hamlet. And he said to me, stop the class. Everything was quiet. And he said, all right, I want you to do Hickey as Hamlet and Hamlet as Hickey.
Wow, there you go. That's great.
Right?
That is great.
What did I do? Immediately, I went into Hickey as Hamlet and Hamlet as Hickey. Oh, I did them both. And you know what he said? We take in all kinds here. And the audience was standing up cheering. So what happened is I did both parts relatively well, I guess. But the point is, that's the point. You inspired that story. I'm sorry, but...
It's good.
Does it answer it? Does it answer it? Thank you.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Al Pacino had some great stories, and there's another one still to come in this KMOX profile. But one of the interesting things about The Irishman is the de-aging process. So you will see these actors that you know. Al Pacino is 79 years old, for example. Joe Pesci, Robert De Niro. You will see them look like much younger men because of computer technology. And Martin Scorsese talked about that a little bit.
This computer-generated imagery was really designed by ILM, Pablo Hellman, and everybody there. And so in conjunction with Rodrigo Prieto, they worked this out in terms of lighting, stuff that I didn't necessarily participate in terms of. There were some technical things. Why is that there? And they'd explain, well, because the marker on the face has to hit a certain place, et cetera. But I didn't find that their work with the technical aspects of the lighting that was necessary interfered in any way with what I was doing and what the actors were doing. And I think the one of the key changes that we noticed on set really was the cameras themselves. The cameras had three lenses, and I was shooting two cameras a lot of the time, so we had six lenses, and we had extra crew. And we were carrying nine cameras all together because of other issues. And so it became a pretty big operation in a way. And there was a little ritual. Oh, yeah, but the center lens was capturing the image. Then there were lenses on either side that were dealing with the information coming from the computer onto from the markers on their faces, and which were developed in such a way as they were almost invisible, which was great. And the thing about it, then there was this sort of ritual after each time we did a take. Everything would stop, and a young man would come out, and he'd have a board with something, some kind of design on it, and he'd move it a certain way. And I'd be looking at, what the hell is this? And then it was dead quiet, and then he goes back, and then he comes out with a silver ball. And the ball moved. And I would call it the adoration of the ball at this point. And I realized it was like a benediction of some kind. And he turned it, and then the ball was opaque. It wasn't silver. And he moved it a certain way. I still don't know exactly what that is. But at that point, at first I'm saying, what the hell am I waiting for? And then I realized, this is what's going to be. This is how, now we do the slate, now we do the ball, now we wait. Okay, now everybody can move on. And every time we'll be using that stuff, that's what we do. Remember, it sort of became like a welcome ritual. And that was the only thing that I felt was that I was cognizant of, really, on the set. And I think basically one of the things that was interesting was the nature of movement that you guys had to work with. Maybe you could talk about that.
For me, the challenge would come pretty much every time I really moved in the thing. So they'd say, Al, you're 39. And I'd say, I know that. And it would say, all right. And then they'd say, 39. Then I'd have to be in the scene, and I'd have to get up. Yeah. And would start.
And we had a guy. We had a guy there just come up to you and say, "You're 39. You get up at like a 39-year-old." And I say, "Oh yeah, I can never do this scene tonight. Get up like that." So I was.
I wondered how you guys. Well, the thing was, that he came up to me and he said, "It was the first day of shooting," and he said, "You were yelling at the TV about the Kennedys and stuff." And you got up, and I said, "Great." And then we did another take. I said, "Terrific. Okay, we're going to do one more." And then and they came up to me and they said, "He's supposed to be 49 in this," and I said, "Oh, what does that mean?" I said, "He doesn't look like he's getting up at 49." So I told the guys, I said, "You tell him." It's the first day I'm working with the man. I don't want to go over. Hey, what are you doing? 40 years we haven't worked. I got to get the first thing I'm going to tell him. So, I said, okay, I'll go tell him. So I said, Al, everything's fine. Said, yeah. I said, the only thing is you're 49. He went, oh. And I said, okay, I get it. So we did another take, and you got up. And we cut, and I said, what do you think? And he said, 62. It became a number game until you finally got it.
More on The Irishman, including another epic story from Al Pacino, still to come on KMOX Profiles.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Frank Sheeran. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, you said it right.
Under the contract, management can only fire a driver on very specific charges. So, do you have a show up late?
No.
Do you have any moving violations?
No.
Do you drink on the job?
No.
You ever hit anybody?
On a job?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
All right, then. We don't have nothing to worry about.
That's Ray Romano with Robert De Niro in a scene from The Irishman. I mentioned earlier that De Niro and Scorsese have worked together 9 previous times before The Irishman. Al Pacino had never worked with Scorsese, and Al Pacino has directed a handful of films, not very many. He was asked in Los Angeles at the premiere if he learned anything from this legendary director.
This is the second one today. I'm really... I'm glad to say this. I've directed films in the sense that I was the director, the filmmaker of it, but I'm not a director, and I'm not a filmmaker. They are. And I say that I make films. Like when I do them, it's a learning experience for me. And it's a sense of doing a home movie I have, and this is where I learn about. I learned about film by directing a film. I learned about editing and what it was by doing my own. How does someone? I have to say, I was fortunate to have done Looking for Richard. Yeah. I did that because I had some idea, but really, why I did it, what was motivated me, was that. I did Richard III several times, and when I did it in New York on Broadway, the reviewer said, Pacino has set back Shakespeare 50 years in America. And I said, that can't be. I love Shakespeare.
Oh, I love it.
And I had done it, in Boston, and there's a whole reason why that thing didn't happen, and one of the reasons was it didn't have a concept in terms of it's so interesting, you know. I could go on forever, and I'm going to go on forever. But when we did it at the Loeb Theater, it didn't work at all. I was a young guy, I was famous already, but I had done Richard III because I knew I had done it at the Actors Studio and had a feeling for it. I just wanted to do it, and I wanted to learn. I always pretty much want to learn. And working with these guys, I learned a lot. I always, that's sort of what I leave my, that's probably why I continue to do it. But I did it, and I did it at the Loeb. This is interesting. And the set was, because I'll tell you something about Irishmen and what they did in Irishmen about a set. You've seen it, so I can talk to you about it. But I did it at the Loeb in Cambridge. And, I mean, I was going on with a fever. I was all, my friend was giving me the words, and I had 2 weeks. But it wasn't there. And I go out and, You haven't lived until you go out in the second act. And there's a lot of red seats in front of you. The half the audience left, maybe two-thirds. And I thought, what did I do? What's wrong with me? And so, but then I turned around and looked at the set. And the set was a bunch of bars. I don't know what the hell, who did that and what it came from. I had no idea what I was doing, you know, now is the winter of our discontent, but in front of bars. And I don't know where the hell I was. So they threw me out of Boston. They threw me out of Cambridge. But as I was leaving, my great friend and mentor, Charlie Lawton, said to me, Al, I don't know. I think I see something there. I see something there in what you're doing. David Wheeler, the great theater company of Boston director, he came. He said, Al, let's not just give this up, please. I said, well, I know, but I feel, you know, I want to get out of town or something. And they said, no, we got this Church of the Covenant. It was right on Marlborough Street, beautiful. This church. And we all went in there, this medieval sort of thing. And I came up. There was a pulpit. And I came up from the pulpit like this with a stocking hat on. And I said, now is the winter of our discontent. And the thing just started to go. We had a set.
That's no.
We had a concept, a context. You understand? And when we went to Broadway, we didn't bring the church. And these are important things. Now, there's a scene, if you saw it, in The Irishman, where Jimmy Hoffa is going to his end. He doesn't know it. He goes into this place, this house.
Yeah.
And I walked in on the first day on the set of this particular scene. I walked into the house, and I see this house. Nothing you could really overtly recognize, but I knew that this house was deadly, just the way they had put it together. But you couldn't find it. They didn't have things all over it. It was just simple furniture, but in such a way, I thought, this is so, I mean, talk about artful. And that's what I saw. This is what is done as directors. And you saw, it didn't do anything, but it, this is a place where someone was going to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it looked like a normal little house, but it wasn't, because they did certain things. And if he ever would go into the details of what they did, you know what they did. It was a lot, but it looked like nothing. So I don't see the world that way. I don't see the world as, my creative feelings don't come from getting concepts like that. This isn't me. So I'm not a director, because I don't want to. First thing I do when I finish the film is I go read a play. What play am I going to do? You know, I'll do Richard again, in the church, of course. You know, but that's my thing. So the other directing things I did is because I liked particular plays. If I did Chinese Coffee, I'm sure none of you saw it. It didn't. Well, that's good to hear. I did it because I very much wanted to. I wanted to preserve that piece of material that I really liked it. I liked what it was. I liked the writer, Ira Lewis, who's gone now. And I liked that atmosphere of what those guys were going through in the village, and the artists in the from the 60s, now in the 80s. And the whole concept made me feel like I wanted to be in it. And I didn't have anyone I could pay to direct it, so I did it myself. That's why I directed. And then I directed another thing called The Local Stigmatic, again, which was very interesting. And, yes, and I did that knowing that this is not going to go anywhere. But it was a way of me preserving some of the stuff. I had the money at the time, so I was able to help with the financing of it. And that was my reasoning. So even though I directed film and whatever, I don't look at it. I don't look at myself that way. I have no desire to do it. And I have great respect and admiration for people who just do that. And it's not me. It's like, you know, I like football, but I won't play it.
Just a quick story. Pacino was really funny that day. And right after the Q&A that we had with De Niro and Pacino and Scorsese, he ended up on my elevator. I was going up to my room in Beverly Hills. And he gets off the elevator and he says, he was talking to some of the people that were working with him because I think he was on to do some more print interviews or something like that. He said, "Guys, I gotta pee again," just like you would hear Al Pacino say. And I turned around and said, "Al, that's actually a serious issue with this movie since it's 209 minutes. And he goes, "I know. Somebody's got to do something about it." So, yes, I shared some information about my bladder with Al Pacino. I still haven't shared my thoughts on The Irishman. We'll do that next on KMOX.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
A friend of ours is having a little trouble. A friend at the top.
Back then, there was nobody in this country who didn't know who Jimmy Hoffa was.
You gotta go! Get the gun out of his hand!
You always charge a guy with a gun. With a knife, you run away. So you charge with a gun, with a knife, you run.
I think you heard earlier in the profile how funny Al Pacino is, and there's a little humor even with the Hoffa character. One thing that I have not done this entire hour is share with you my thoughts about the film. I've invited my colleague, fellow film critic Christian Toto from HollywoodandToto.com to join me for a few minutes to kind of share some thoughts on this epic movie. Christian, how are you?
I'm good.
So, you know, the one thing that I told people after the premiere was it's long. It's really long. And I think I even joked, yeah, it started on a Thursday night at about 7:45 and was still going on. Having said that, this is a very compelling movie. Look, it's Martin Scorsese. Here's one thing that's interesting, though. I asked several critics, and I'd be curious to know your answer, and I even did this again recently in St. Louis. I said, all right, Robert De Niro's character, not his real person, you know, persona, his character, Frank Sheeran, has a gun to your head. If you had to vote between Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and The Irishman right now for Best Picture, what would you do?
Oh, gosh. I might lean towards Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Here's what's interesting. Every person has said that. Everybody has said that. And I would agree with that. Now, Christian, that takes nothing away from this movie. I thought it was excellent. I do think, though, you know, if I'm being hypercritical, I don't know that it needed to be 3 hours and 40 minutes.
It didn't. And, I'm not a professional film editor by trade, but I know I could go in and slice and dice a little bit. There are certain scenes, certain moments that are not essential, and you're working with a story that is epic in length. You got to kill your darlings, as they say. You've got to cut it down a little bit because you really want to have the scope of the movie be more important than, oh my gosh, my bladder is going to give out any second.
Well, you know, and I shared the story in the last segment about joking with Al Pacino about that because, true story, for the last hour of the movie, I really kind of wanted to get up, but I was in the middle of this theater. It wasn't a very roomy theater, and I thought I'm gonna hang on to it. So maybe I need to watch it again because of that. But look, very limited theatrical run. It gets to theaters soon and then opens up on Netflix. So if you watch it on Netflix, you can break it down into several segments if you want, but that kind of takes away from the experience, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. The running time was really on my mind before I saw it while I was watching it, and maybe there was too much hype about that element. But listen, we've seen three-hour movies before. They're not, they're rare, but it shouldn't be such a factor. But for the most part, I do think it moved well. I wasn't bored. I was engaged. But I think this movie is technically brilliant, but it didn't grab me in an emotional way like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood did.
I had a little bit of audio earlier in the profile from Scorsese and Pacino on the de-aging process. What were your thoughts on that? Was that effective?
Mostly, yes. In the beginning, it felt a little creepy. Do you remember watching the Polar Express where they recreated humans
through
digital technology?
Yeah.
And it was the technology wasn't ready for prime time. And there were a couple of moments here that felt similar early on. And then I kind of went with it and kind of forgot about it. And so I think it's mostly successful. But I also will say the actors are physically older. And if you look at De Niro's physique, he's a man in his 70s. And he's very healthy and very hearty and very in good shape. But he doesn't carry himself like a man who's in his 20s or 30s or 40s. So I think there are flaws there, too, which are not really fixable.
Yeah, that was something that earlier this hour Scorsese addressed in Pacino. You know, they were on set sometimes, and the assistant directors would say, look, you know, he doesn't move like a 45-year-old. Well, Al Pacino is 79. So I agree with you. At the start of the film, I maybe focused on that a little bit because I knew about the de-aging process, but it does settle in. This is a bit of a changing dynamic, as you know, in Hollywood. Martin Scorsese goes with Netflix. They basically give him carte blanche. He makes a 3-hour, 40-minute movie that costs gazillions of dollars, and now we'll have to see if the audience latches on to this film. Christian Toto, always great to have you on KMOX talking about movies.
Oh, my pleasure.
We're going at war with these people. War.
Things have gotten out of hand with our friend.
You gotta sit down. Everybody says so.
No, I'm not sitting down. I can't do it.
It's what it is.
What it is.
I know things they don't know I know.
You've been listening to Profiles. If you missed any of this episode or want to hear other profiles, go to KMOX.com and click On Demand.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.